In one moment, the search for Christopher Adamson. Address unknown.
And here again is Henry Simon.
Sometimes before in this series of programs, I've talked about the motives for disappearances. It never ceases to surprise me that not only are two cases never the same, but there are even so many basically different reasons for a person not being where he or she ought to be. Just when I feel that I've now seen everything, along comes a case which is totally different from anything that's gone before. The disappearance of Christopher Adamson was an example of what I mean. His father, George Adamson, a noted London broker, came to see me one Monday morning in June of last year. George Adamson was a worried man, a kindly one, but a worried one. He came to report that his son Chris was missing and had been for some 2 days. His weathered face was creased with anxiety as he spoke to me.
I'm desperately worried, Mr. Simon. The more so because when I last saw Chris, we parted, not on the best of terms.
There was a quarrel?
Well, hardly, but we argued. Rather acrimoniously, I'm unhappy to say.
I don't think you should reproach yourself too bitterly, Mr. Adamson. Arguments occur in the best regulated of families.
Yes, I suppose so.
What did you argue about?
Oh, it seems so trivial in retrospect, I hardly remember. In any case, I'm quite sure it's neither important nor relevant.
Your son is how old?
Chris will be 22 at the end of November.
Mm-hmm. And what does he do?
Do?
Well, he works, I take it.
Oh, I'm afraid I misunderstood you for a moment. Actually, he doesn't, not yet. You see, he's only comparatively recently come out of the Army, National Service, you know. Well, he's going to join me in Adamson and Phelps when he's settled down.
Oh, did he find National Service so unsettling?
That's not quite what I intended to imply, Mr. Simon. I felt that when Chris came out of the Army that he should have a complete rest, complete break before entering the world of commerce.
Oh, yes?
Yes, there's a great future for Chris. Of course, I had to work the business up from scratch. Chris will inherit as is.
Quite.
My partner was killed during the war. Poor Godfrey. He was a brave man. He felt the call. And he didn't shirk his duty. Only 38 when he went, poor lad.
Oh. There are no other directors of your firm?
No. Just me. Their retiring age. And Chris. He's a lucky boy.
He certainly sounds it.
The whole position's absolutely gilt-edged as far as Chris is concerned. However, we're getting rather away from the purpose of my visit.
Yes, you say your son's been missing since the day before yesterday.
That's right, Saturday.
At what time on Saturday did you last see him?
Just after lunch, which we had together at our home at Caterham.
Oh, that's not too far away from Bromley and Kent, is it?
That's right.
And that's when the argument occurred?
I'm afraid so. It happened actually at lunch. Chris got up and went to his room. About an hour later, I went up there to see him, to try and make amends if I could, and he wasn't there. Called out to him, but there was no answer. I suddenly felt cold and lonely, as if I knew something had happened. Even so, I didn't really worry till that night. Then I thought Chris might have gone round to see his friend Peter. I decided not to worry. I went to bed early on Saturday. It'd been a trying week. And, of course, Chris had a key. I breakfasted in bed. I always do on a Sunday. It wasn't till about 11 that I realized that Chris hadn't come in, nor was he in the house. Well, then I panicked. I rang up everybody I could think of. No luck. I didn't know what to do. And then I thought of the Missing Persons Bureau. And I felt if anybody could help me, then it was you.
I'm very flattered. How did you hear of us in the first place?
You discovered the whereabouts of a friend, Harley Cuthbertson.
Oh, yes, I remember the case well.
So, here I am.
You haven't been in touch with the police?
No.
May I inquire why? This doesn't sound like a case where possible publicity would be harmful in any way.
I'll be quite frank with you, Mr. Simon. Quite apart from the fact that I don't think this is a case for the police, the publicity which might result from consulting them could well be injurious to me.
In what way?
I've been notified that I may expect a knighthood in the birthday honors list.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. And naturally, I wish to avoid any possible scandal.
Yes, of course.
But I must find Chris.
Tell me, this sort of thing has never happened before.
Good heavens, no. It's completely uncharacteristic.
Well, Mr. Adamson, if you'll give me some half a dozen or so addresses, we'll see what we can do for you. After George Adamson's departure, I called in Agent Brad Farley and detailed the case to him. He listened in attentive silence. There was a long pause when I finished speaking. Then he spoke.
Chris Adamson. He'd be quite a catch, wouldn't he?
Meaning?
I mean from a blackmail point of view.
He would, but I don't think it's even remotely likely. This isn't Chicago.
Yeah, okay, Chief. I know it happens very rarely in England, even so.
No, it looks to me rather like a case of pique. Son, newly endowed with freedom from the army and perhaps even having attained some rank, doesn't yet feel like bowing to parental wishes.
Yeah, but from what you've told me, old Adamson seems rather a genial old stick.
Oh, yes, but even so.
Even so, it's worth considering.
I must say that when you said that Adamson would be quite a catch, I was thinking along rather different lines.
Cherchez la femme?
But with rather a difference. Whilst I think that our client is 100% reliable and honest, I don't think he gave us quite the complete picture.
Well, he answered all the questions you put to him, didn't he?
Very nearly. To be more accurate, he answered all but one.
That one being?
The cause of the lunchtime quarrel between himself and his son. The quarrel which took place immediately before Christopher Adamson's disappearance. When I questioned Mr. Adamson Sr., he simply said something to the effect that it had, well, no bearing on the case.
And that was the only question that he didn't answer.
Yes. But then I didn't ask all the questions.
Why not?
I didn't want to do all your work for you, did I? I discussed the questions which I'd left unasked at some length with Farley. He was all for heading straight for Waterham, but I dissuaded him. I felt that as Chris Adamson's close friend Peter Simpson lived nearer at hand, he might call there first.
You're Mr. Peter Simpson?
That's right.
I'm Farley, Brad Farley, Missing Persons Bureau.
Are you indeed? Well, then you must be looking for Chris, right?
Check.
I've been away for the weekend. But my mother told me when I came in that Mr. Adamson had been on the telephone. What's it all about?
That's what I'm trying to find out. You were in the army with Christopher Adamson, right?
That's right. We were both in the signals.
Can you think of any reason for him having gone off like this?
No, I can't. But supposing he hasn't just gone off, supposing he's been kidnapped?
Yeah, that thought occurred to me. But it's not very likely. At least so I'm told it isn't.
Well, he's quite a catch.
Yeah, something tells me I've been here before. What about girlfriends, huh?
Mine or his?
His.
Norma O'Brien. Smasher. Nightclub hostess.
Oh, that sounds promising.
You should see her.
I intend doing just that. By the way, does the old man approve?
I don't really know that he's in the picture.
Oh.
Or if you're seeing him, I don't think I should mention it. Actually, I'm sure he wouldn't approve, although he'd be very nice about it. He is very nice.
Yeah, so everybody keeps telling me. Whereabouts this Norma O'Brien, am I?
Yes. Irish blood, somewhere back down the line. I don't know where she lives, but she works every night at the Blue Feather off Forsyth Street.
Oh, yeah, I know it.
Do you think she's mixed up in all this?
Could be. She'd at least supply a motive of sorts.
Well, anything else I can tell you?
Not just a moment, no, but don't run away. I'll be back.
As the Blue Feather is a late nightclub, Farley decided to pay his visit to client before combining business and pleasure later in the evening. It was mid-afternoon when he reached Chatham in Surrey. He found the Adamson country house without too much trouble, and George Adamson was in and would see him at once.
Please sit down, Mr. Farley. Mr. Simon told me I could expect a call from you.
Thank you.
Is it too early to ask whether you have any news for me?
I'm afraid it is, yeah. I can take it from that your son hasn't put in an appearance since you spoke to Mr. Simon, and that you haven't heard from him, right?
I've heard nothing. I'd have notified you immediately if I had. I'm wondering if I should have called in the police.
Well, give us at least 24 hours, Mr. Adamson.
Yes, of course, I'm sorry. But I really am so terribly worried.
Yeah, well, there are just three questions I'd like to ask you, sir.
Yes, of course, anything.
Well, first of all, what about your son's girlfriends?
Well, I don't think he has any. Not steady ones, that is. Oh, he dated a number of pretty girls like any other young man of his age. But I don't think any more than once or twice at the most. What's your second question?
You told Mr. Simon that you couldn't think of any reason why your son should leave home voluntarily. You haven't thought of any reason since you left our office?
No, I haven't. I did tell Mr. Simon we'd had a bit of an argument on Saturday, though. Although I think that was hardly a motive for Chris to leave home.
Well, that brings me to the third question. What was the argument about?
Well, I did also say to Mr. Simon that couldn't possibly have anything to do with the case.
Yeah, I know you did, sir, but would you let me be the judge? Rest assured that anything you say to me will be treated as being in the strictest confidence.
Well, if you must know, we talked about money.
Oh. Funnily enough, that was another thing I was going to ask you. How does your son manage for money if he's not yet earning?
Well, he receives an allowance, of course. Oh. A more than adequate allowance. Also, he's a small amount of savings under a compulsory army savings scheme. However, I don't think there's much of that left.
Well, then why did you quarrel about money?
Simply because he wanted me to invest money in a scheme which was neither practical nor desirable. I told him so, and he was upset. It wasn't the first time he brought the matter up. However, this time, I'm afraid he lost his temper. And things were said which, frankly, should not be said between father and son.
I see.
Were there any other questions, Mr. Carley?
Not right now, sir. But there will be. Later. And though he appeared to tell me more than he told you, Chief, now I come to analyze it, I don't think he did.
Well, at least you got the fact that the quarrel, which seems to loom all important, was over money to be invested.
Yeah, sure, but it doesn't tell us much.
Not about our missing person, no, but it does tell us a little about Client.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a lot of money, that much is obvious. Yet he begrudges an investment advised by his son and heir. Now, why?
Mrs. Hartley left about 5 minutes ago. She put the phone through.
Missing Persons Bureau.
Gray Street, Mr. Simon, please.
Speaking.
Oh, Mr. Simon, I was hoping I'd catch you. It's George Adamson here. Chris is all right.
What?
Yes, he's safe, but we must stop looking for him.
I don't quite understand.
I just had a note. Came in the 5:30 delivery. It's from the kidnappers.
Henry Simon returns to continue this story in just a moment. You are listening to The Colgate Show, Address Unknown.
And here again is Henry Simon.
I must admit, the news staggered me. Farley had mentioned the possibility of blackmail, but kidnapping was not even considered. Would you mind repeating that, Mr. Adamson?
I received a note from Chris's kidnappers. It arrived not 2 minutes ago.
Well, do you mind reading it to me?
Well, it does say that any search in progress must be called off.
Does it specifically say that you mustn't divulge its contents?
No.
Good. Then will you please read it to me?
It says, if you want to see your son again, you go to your bank first thing in the morning and get £10,000 in small denomination notes, used ones. When you get back to your house with the money, there will be a further communication. Your son is well, and he'll stay well, so long as you follow out these instructions, and also call off any search you may have instigated.
Well, at least they're literate. Is the note written or typed?
Looks like separate words cut out from newspapers.
It would be. What are you going to do?
I'm going to follow the instructions to the letter. £10,000 won't break me. Kidnappers have known me better than they'd have asked for more. I felt from the start that it was a case of kidnapping. My immediate feeling is one of relief.
Yes, I can understand that. You can rely on us to do nothing which might jeopardize your son's safety.
I'm very glad you agree to call off the investigation.
That's not quite what I said, Mr. Adamson. I said I do nothing to jeopardize your son's position, and I mean just that. However, there's one thing you can do for me, if you will.
What's that, Mr.
Please phone me after the kidnappers have contacted you tomorrow morning.
You think that's wise?
Mr. Adamson, this is not America. Your phone will not be tapped. Rely on me, and please trust me. but phone me. That evening, Farley went, as arranged, to the Blue Feather. It was far from the nightclub he'd expected, being almost a washed beatnik set-up. It all seemed very pleasant and wholesome. Farley arrived shortly after 9:30, and found that the floor show started at 11. The hour and a half passed very easily in the friendly atmosphere of the club. Then Norma O'Brien appeared. She sang very well. Afterwards, she joined the diners and dancers. Before long, she was sitting at Farley's table.
That was quite an act, Miss O'Brien.
Thank you.
Good for the ears and bad for the blood pressure.
Thank you again. You haven't been in here before.
No, but I'd enjoy your act however many times I heard it.
Well, that's not quite what I meant. I mean, I haven't seen you here before.
Do you know all the clients?
Pretty well.
Well, you're quite right. I am new here. Still, a friend of mine comes here, and he's often talked to me about it. I've been meaning to drop in for a long time. And tonight I got around to it. I phoned Chris, but he wasn't at home, so I came on my own.
Chris?
Yeah, my friend.
What's his other name?
Oh, I thought if you'd know it, but it's Adamson.
Oh, but I know Chris Adamson very well. Very well indeed.
What a coincidence.
Yes, isn't it?
Funny, he's never mentioned knowing you.
Well, there's a reason for that.
Oh?
What's even funnier is that he's never mentioned you to me.
Well, will he be in tonight, you know?
Not tonight. At least I shouldn't think so. But how would I know, anyway?
When I couldn't get him at home, I half expected to find him already here.
Well, he hasn't been in, for 3 or 4 days.
Look, I've got to be pushing along. If Chris comes in later, tell him I was here, will you? There was something I wanted to see him about, something rather important.
I'll tell him. Don't you worry about that. I'll be sure to tell him you were here.
It was shortly after 10 the next morning when the call from Adamson Sr. came through. He sounded breathless and excited.
Mr. Simon, it's come.
A letter?
No, a phone call. Just after I got back from the bank. Almost as if they were watching the house. I think it was from a public phone box. A woman's.
You've got the money, haven't you?
Yes, I've just returned from the bank.
Well, listen carefully. 1 hour from now, that's at 11:15, drive your car onto the main Brighton Road. That's the A5. Just after the road bypasses Reigate, there's a little pub called the Golden Horse. You can see it quite easily from the road. A couple of 100 yards past that, the road passes over a stream. You can't miss it because there's a freshly painted white milestone. As soon as you pass the milestone, throw the bag containing the money out of the window onto the grass verge. Don't slow down. Once the money is out of the car, accelerate and drive on for another 5 miles before turning your car and driving to the house.
Well, supposing somebody sees me?
Very unlikely there'll be anybody there at that time. But if there is, drive on for exactly 1 mile and drop it at the second milestone.
And when will my son be returned to me?
He'll be released before midday.
Is he all right?
Perfectly all right. Bye.
And you say the call has only just come through?
Not 2 minutes ago, Mr. Simon.
Good. You'll follow the instructions, of course.
Yes. You're not going to do anything, are you?
Rest assured, Mr. Adamson, I'm not going to do anything that will endanger your son. Goodbye. Right, Farley, we've got to work fast. We've got less than an hour, plus the time it'll take Adamson to get onto the Brighton Road. You can drive Glenn Martin's car, can't you?
Are you kidding?
They've given 2 places for him to dump the money. That means that they won't be necessarily at the first place. Hmm. They'll probably follow him in another car once he passes Reigate. If there's anybody at the first place, any casual passerby, that is, it's going to be awkward. As soon as you've gone, I'm going to have a further chat with client. Just a couple of ends I want to tie up.
I thought I was going to do the tying up in Martin's car.
Oh, yes, you are. But there's still a couple of things about this case I don't quite understand.
Yeah, do I take a gun?
Somehow, I think that a gun is the last thing you'll need. Neither the police nor I approve of guns, in any case. Our job is to find a missing person, not to apprehend a criminal.
Okay. Suppose if I have a long wait, I can always make myself a bow and arrow.
Thank you.
Adamson, there's something I want to add to what I said to you just now.
Yes?
You're not a fast driver, are you?
No.
Good. Today I want you to be particularly slow.
What are you going to do, Mr. Simon?
I'm going to give you some sound advice. You must trust me completely. I had to let you go to the bank this morning because it was quite on the cards that your movements were being watched. However, in your own home, you can't be observed. Be assured that the kidnappers don't know about your phone calls.
Supposing they've been trying to get me?
It's most unlikely. If what I think is correct, in any case, anybody could be phoning you. Now, what I want you to do is this. I want you to pack the bag that you intended filling with money with newspaper of about the same bulk.
But, Mr. Simon, they'll just take it out on Chris. I don't mind the money.
Please
really, I don't.
Trust me. Please trust me. I'm quite certain your son will not suffer in any way. Now, please do as I say. There isn't much time. You'd better start right away.
Very well.
There were two calls to be made, both of them in London. I left instructions with Mrs. Hartley and set out on the first. Here, I drew a blank.
I'm afraid she's out, and that's rather surprising. She usually sleeps till midday. Well, I mean, if you work till the early hours, you've got to catch up in your sleep sometime, haven't you? Stands to reason. Matter of fact, I can't ever remember her getting up this early. But 8 o'clock and she was out. Crack of dawn for her.
I tracked Peter Simpson, the missing person's friend, to his office in the city. Your friend Chris Adamson, who's been missing for a few days now, needed some money for an investment.
Yes, his father wouldn't give it to him, so bang goes our chance of $1 million. Oh, if he could only have got his inheritance, then it would have been so much different for both of us.
In what way?
Well, you see, Chris's mother left him £10,000 in trust. Naturally, he thought he'd get it when he turned 21, but can you believe it? The old boy won't part. At least, not until Chris is safely tied up in the firm.
And what did you want the £10,000 for?
We had first option on a garage and roadhouse in a very good position on the Brighton Road, but now Chris has disappeared, his father won't part, and the option expires tomorrow.
Henry Simon returns to conclude this story in just a moment. And here again is Henry Simon.
Three cars passed the Golden Horse on the main Brighton Road within minutes of each other that same morning. The first, Agent Martin's red sports car, driven by Farley, pulled off the road just past the milestone. Fortunately, bracken was thick enough just to provide enough cover. Hardly had Farley got himself into position than another car passed.
And here we are, right in the nose. Now we shall see what we shall see. Must say it's a bit of a temptation, all that loot lying there. Uh-huh. Here comes the car. Well, well, well. Good morning, Miss O'Brien. Fancy meeting you here. Oh, yeah. Isn't that our missing boy, Chris Adamson, at the wheel? Guess what? My car's broken down. I wonder if you two would be kind enough to give me a lift back to town.
The curious thing was that although Chris Adamson had, in fact, blackmailed his own father, the money was his legitimately anyway. It was an odd situation. Odder still was the fact that he did nothing to destroy the bond between father and son. George Adamson, having received proof positive of his son's determination to carve a way for himself rather than move into a ready-made position, made no further attempts to withhold the necessary money. And now, as always, this is Henry Simon, inviting you to meet me here again, and for the present, bidding you au revoir.